Hey, we this morning, I should not say we, it's just me. Jack is off with his 5 grandchildren this morning and celebrating St. Patrick's Day since his wife is Irish. So they are enjoying the weekend. And want to let you know that, listeners, this show today is being brought to you by Mary Jo Borman of Borman Law Offices, and she's an estate planning attorney located at 123 East Main in downtown Zeeland. And you can contact her at 616-772-2487 or visit her website at www.bormanlaw.com. Borman is B-O-E-R-M-A-N, bormanlaw.com. Hey, listeners, we have a great show today. It's what to do after your spouse dies. And actually, Mary Jo Borman's going to be joining us here for the last part of our show to discuss the estate and will and trust matters that occur when a spouse dies. So stay tuned for that. We have a lot of great things coming up here in our show. And also, just want to, again, you know, it's been a week and a half since we had our women's workshop here at the Legends Country Club. And what a great show. We had 99 ladies, wonderful evening, great speakers. We had Mary Jo Borman talking about estate planning issues. We had Stacy Campice from the insurance group. We had Lisa Kozier from Weight Watchers, who's an ambassador for Weight Watchers and a coach. And actually, she writes all the material, coaching material for Weight Watchers in North America. So we had her as a special guest speaker. And then Jack and I spoke about the importance of knowing your number, what income, what number, amount of money do you need when you retire? So those who are listening and came to our workshop, thank you. And remember that if you have questions today, number to call is 395-1450. That's 395-1450. Hey, listeners, buy the numbers for the week, the 5 years from the bear low. So back to March 9 of 2009, the bear market closed a low of 677. That's the S&P 500 we're talking about. Since then, it has gained 68%. The S&P 500 has gained 68.6%. And wow, what a great year. So think of it this way. Over the last 5 years, the market has risen, and the additional 68% there, those are 500 stocks, which include large company stocks. Those stocks would include like Coca-Cola, P&G, Clorox, companies in that are part of the S&P 500. Now, back in that same time when the market hit the low on March 9 of 2009, the end of the bear market, actually, that was the end. It took 17 months. The bear market happened over 17 months in which the stock index fell 57%. Now, listeners, think of it this way. If you have a $100 bill and you lose 50%, think in your mind where that brings you. That brings you down to $50. What percent do you need to make on that $50 to get back to break even, that $100? You have to make 100%. And it's like when you stop and think of it that way, yeah, when the market goes down, you need to gain sometimes almost twice as much to get back just to break even. So when you look at that, you know, back then, there was a lot of people that thought the bear market was going to still continue even after March 9, 2009, and it didn't. It actually turned around. And bear markets last anywhere from a short period of time in 9 months to sometimes 3 years. This one is 17 months, which is right in line with averages. And, you know, there was a good call back then. There was a John Athens who wrote about we may be at our low in the market, and he was right. You know, he just said the market has gained, and it did. And from there, the other thing that's happened over the past 5 years is of these S&P 500 companies, the earnings of these companies per share has averaged a growth of 7.5% per year. So these companies out there are increasing their earnings, their revenue earnings, by 7.5% per year. That's very, very good. You know, large companies like this that grow at 7, 10%, you know, getting above double digits, that's hard to do. Now, let's talk a little bit about, we've been talking about the S&P 500. Let's talk about the NASDAQ. This is a list of more of your smaller, medium-sized companies. And the index basically closed at one of its all-time highs on March 7th of 2014. So that was another record that was set, and that was up 289% from its low. And so those are things that are happening out there. Here's something very interesting. Of those 500 stocks that were ranked, the number 500 stock, so the lowest performing stock, year to date through 2/28/2014, while after losing 33% and ranked number 500, is now ranked number 3 out of 500, which gained 237% back. And then the individual stock that was ranked 499 a year ago now ranks number 18, gaining 96%. So there is some of those stocks that perform bad 1 year. Maybe it's a good time to be buying. And I'm not saying as a recommendation to go out and be buying, but just think about that. You buy low, sell high. The last major tax reform was implemented over a two-year phase. Congress lowered the top individual marginal tax bracket from 50% in 1996 to 28% in 1988. And that's from the Internal Revenue Service. They still keep taxing, and I still believe that taxes will go up. The Fed meets for 2 days in March here, and that's March 18 and 19. And if, as expected, they will probably leave short-term interest rates unchanged. That's the general consensus that is out there. And it will be their 42nd consecutive meeting with no change in rates. The other thing that may happen, they may reduce the bond buying back of bonds that they've been buying over the course. They may reduce what they're buying, not totally reduce it to zero, but step back again. U.S. exports to China have increased 190% over the last 8 years and growing from $42 billion to $122 billion. And those are some big increases. College costs. This is always interesting because I'm thinking of myself here. Another 3 to 4 years, I'll have my first son in college. The cost of tuition, fees, room, and board at an average interstate public college has increased 5.8% per year over the last 30 years, reaching an average of $18,391. And if college costs had instead risen only by the rate of inflation, which is 2.9, so almost 3%, then a year of college would only cost $7,982. So college costs have risen a lot faster than inflation. Other things here and by the news that's always interesting. The unemployment rate for individuals that have a bachelor's degree or higher was 3.4% over this as of February 28, approximately half the national unemployment rate, so of 6.7. President Obama, here's the deal, sent to Congress his budget plan for fiscal year 2015. Last Tuesday, and his plan called for $3.3 trillion of tax receipts, $3.9 trillion of government outlays. You know, if I was in business, and you think about that, you take in this much revenue, but you spend this much, you're spending more than what you're taking in, well, I'd be out of business, you know, and it's like we as a government cannot keep, or we as a people cannot keep letting our government do this. Fewer, 85% of American workers in the private sector, government jobs, these are non-government jobs, were covered by a defined benefit pension plan in 1975. So a lot of companies had pension plans in 1975. Today, only 16% are covered by defined benefit pension plans. Big change there, big drop. Wichita State men's basketball team. We're getting down here to March Madness here, and the team finished the regular season 31-0. Indiana was the last team to win the national title with an undefeated record of 32-0 in 1976. So those are some of the numbers that are out there. After break here, we're going to go to your questions, and then we'll be with Mary Jo Borman shortly. So stay tuned. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters with your host, Kerry Cooley. Hey, welcome back, listeners. Thanks for staying right here at your radio dial. It's beautiful and sunny out. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is your host, Kerry Cooley. Hey, our show today coming up here shortly with our special guest speaker, Mary Jo Borman, is what to do after your spouse dies. Some very important estate, trust, and will planning issues that always come about when a spouse passes away. Hey, you know, before the last break, I mentioned about our women's workshop that we had, and Janet, one of our office managers here, emailed me and said, hey, don't forget to mention some of the great comments that we had. And one of the comments from Ann said, thank you for the wonderful dinner and very informative evening. Another comment here from Cheryl said, I just wanted to thank you and Cooley Godfrey for the great dinner and all the great gifts. The basket was over top. Love it and all the goodies in it, too. Food was awesome as well. The speakers were wonderful. I really learned so much over the years, but last night was very informative. Sharon writes in, thank you so much for an enjoyable evening of learning, fun, and great food. Love the market basket and goodies. Educational as always. You guys know how to do it. Another one here from Lori. I just wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed your women's workshop. Thank you so much for making this a learning opportunity available free of cost. I am usually intimidated by anything financial, but found the financial planning easy to understand. So a lot of great comments from, and what a fun evening. I know Mary Jo, who's going to be on our show, we were talking during break, just how fun and energetic and just, it was really just a good workshop for everybody here. Hey, as usual, we always have people that we write, have questions that are written in, called into our office, and we try to take some of these questions and repeat them on the air with some of the answers. You know, we get back to our listeners. So if you have questions that you don't call in today, the number here is 395-1450, 395-1450. There are lines open, so we'd love to take your calls here. But if you don't, you want to call us at our office, the number at our office is 931-1223. So here's some of the questions, and we always try to include a Social Security question of the week. The Social Security question of the week goes, will the Social Security office tell me my options and when is the best way to get the most money from Social Security, or do I have to figure it out before I go to their office? Well, that's a great question. Well, they want you to come into their office prior to you drawing Social Security, anywhere from a month, 30 days to 60 days. And in that way, you can figure out what the amount is when you draw. And you, if you want to draw at 62, if you wait to 65, they'll tell you some of those numbers. What they won't tell you is if you're married and a spouse, and one spouse is 66 and one spouse is 65. Do you wait? Do you have one spouse? Let's say both of you are over full retirement and neither one has taken Social Security. One spouse could go and apply for it and abstain or not withdraw their Social Security and have the other person draw. So is the Social Security office going to look at all the strategies behind this and what's best for your situation? No, they're not. They're going to give you your numbers, and then there are other software programs like we have that will put those numbers in and see how we can make that money last longer, more evenly spread out, or do you want more money in the beginning and less in the end? And so we can walk through all those different scenarios for you and see what's going to best fit you. So great question here. Social Security will give you the numbers, but not all the strategies that fit you and behind it. Other questions. Here's another question written in. James writes in, what is the difference between a 529 and an UPMA account? That's a great question. He has two kids. Do I need a separate account for each kid? Well, an UPMA account is a gift. I mean, it's an investment account for the child that is under 18. Now, it is in the child's name. It is an irrevocable gift of money if you put money in for that child. and that child is control of that money after age 18. A parent cannot just go in and grab the money and run with it. And it can be used for any purpose. Where a 529 plan is a college savings account. You put money in, it grows. And, you know, as it grows and you take it out and use it for higher education, all that growth is tax-free. And it's geared towards using it for college. The other part of the question is, does and you have separate accounts for kids? You don't have to, because like on a 529 plan, you can change the beneficiary to the other child at a later date. However, sometimes parents just make it easy and keep it separate from ease of accounting. Sometimes it's better to keep it separate. UPMA accounts, you do need to keep separate. You cannot change that to the other child because that's a gift to that specific child. Last question here. I heard that I am not supposed to put my children on my bank account. What can I do so that if I need help writing checks, etc., can they help? Great question. We had this question come up actually at our workshop too, and we see it often where, using my mom and dad in this example, let's say my dad passes away, my mom says, hey, Carrie, I want you to be on my account. Well, I'm going to say no to that, because if I'm on the account with my mom, I'm an owner of that account, and if I get sued for something, it then can lay claim to anything that my name is on, even that account of my parents. So I suggest and recommend you keep your name off your parents' account. You get keep their name on, but have them put a transfer on death, paid on death. They're called. Banks can do it. Credit unions can do it. And it's just a legal document that says that upon my death, this money goes to whoever you want have listed there. So it's almost like a beneficiary form on an IRA. That is the best way. It helps some complications down the road, and the money is easily available right away because that legal document overrides a will and a trust. Hey, before we take a break, I want to get started here. We have Mary Jo Borman here in the office with us. Good morning, Mary Jo.
Good morning, Carrie.
And how are you doing this fine morning?
I'm good. Thanks
for having me on. Yeah, well, thanks for being here. And we're going to talk a little bit about what to do after your spouse dies. And, you know, one of the things that people always ask, and we have this happen in our office too, and you probably have it asked, is people pass away and it's your spouse, how many death certificates should a person usually get? And what are these death certificates used for?
Yeah, I've had that question asked before too, Carrie. And, you know, the number 15 is one I often, you know, suggest to people. My understanding, if you get them from the funeral home, they're a little cheaper than if you have to go order more of them later. So if you get five, if you request those at the outset and then you need 10 more later, you're going to pay. And they're fairly expensive to get, I think. So, you know, the funeral home will get them for you. And I always suggest about 15. You'll need them to transfer. If there's real property, you'll need one to file with the Register of Deeds to transfer real property. If there's a car in your spouse's name, you may need it to prove that you're the surviving spouse and get ownership of that. And I'm sure you're familiar with other investment accounts as well.
Yeah, because usually if the spouse dies and you have a joint account with us, we need a copy of that death certificate to change that account to the surviving spouse.
Sure.
And then we keep that on record, just, and especially with retirement accounts, IRA accounts, you have a person that inherits an IRA from their spouse, so we need to have a death certificate. So all those things come into play. House, land, mentioned.
And typically you need an original. I don't know if that's the same for the investment accounts, but for example, with the Register of Deeds, it has to be an original certified copy. So it's not like you can just order one and then plan on making a lot of copies of it. At least for some of those transfers.
Okay. Yeah. I know that a lot of our companies do require, like mutual fund companies, want an original. But the nice thing about it is, too, a lot of times if you want that original back after they are done with it, they will send it back to you.
That's true.
So, you know, always get extras. Doesn't hurt to have extras, because I've even had cases down the road where something comes up a year, even after a year, and something needs to be straightened out. We had a good story here. A couple weeks ago, we had a client come in with old stock certificates, and these stock certificates were like from 1923.
Oh, my.
And it was his dad's stuff, didn't know if it was worth anything, and so we had to obtain a death certificate of his dad. Now, here, this person that was coming in doing this was in his mid-70s, early 80s, so he had to dig up an old death certificate of his father. And then we had to send this all in to see if there was any value on this old stock certificate.
Okay.
And it was quite interesting. He kind of felt like a detective finding that. But, I mean, there's many cases where you're going to use a stock certificate for, you never know, down the road.
Sure. Did he have trouble getting a death certificate anymore, or he was able to find one?
He actually had one on hand.
Okay.
He did have one on hand. You know, if he didn't, I don't know how hard it would be to get an old one that far back.
I'm not sure either. I suppose they'd probably still issue one.
Yeah, I suppose. Have to do a little digging and on that stuff here.
Work
at that
point.
One of the other things that happens, you know, if a spouse dies, what things don't go away? You know, do you still have to pay the bills and all that stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. And typically, you know, you're still going to have your mortgage payment or your utility bills. Anything that was joint with the two of you, you know, you're still responsible for that debt. Typically, with a married couple, you often own things jointly, like your home and your bank accounts. So one benefit to that is there likely will not be probate, particularly with those joint assets. So if you were joint on a checking account and your spouse dies, there's really no work to be done. Nothing changes. You just carry on and with that joint account, and you can sign checks. And the same thing with your home. If you're joint on your home or if it's in a joint trust, you don't need to go through any sort of probate proceedings to get that transferred to your sole name or anything like that. It just kind of passes automatically.
Okay.
So it's going to be those assets that your spouse owned individually,
mm-hmm.
that there may be a little bit of work to be done.
And that's a question I was just going to ask. What about sometimes you always find that your spouse has owned something with just their name on it, and let's say they don't have a trust. What's going to happen to that thing that's only in that person's name that has passed away?
You may have to go through probate, and I had this happen in the last year. In fact, this was an investment account, one that was not with Jack or Carrie, but they were identified as tenants in common rather than joint tenants.
Okay.
So in that case, it's not a joint ownership. So when the one spouse died, that investment account had to go through probate in order to be transferred to that surviving spouse.
Got it.
That's an example where it wasn't really individual ownership, but they didn't have it set up jointly.
Got it, because there is a joint ownership with rights of survivorship, which would have been okay, but this is joint ownership with tenants in common,
exactly.
Which is handled differently.
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, that's something I know you always go over those accounts every time people come in, and I try to do the same. You know, anytime you review your accounts or your estate plan, you want to check how those accounts are titled and who the beneficiaries are to make sure that they're going to pass easily.
So that your kids don't have or your spouse doesn't have surprises. So, hey, listeners, we're going to be back with more of Mary Jo Borman and what to do when a spouse passes away from a legal standpoint and some of the hiccups that you can run into. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is your host, Carrie Cooley. And welcome back, listeners. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. Thanks for staying tuned with us. Hey, what a beautiful day here, and we have a special guest, Mary Jo Borman. We're talking about what to do after your spouse dies. But before we go back to more Mary Jo, we have a guest calling in. And good morning, listener. Good morning. How are you doing? Doing well. Hey, what's your question? I understand you had a question in regards to Social Security.
Yeah, I was considering retiring at age 62 and drawing Social Security. I know at retirement at 62, you're allowed to make so much money while you're drawing Social Security. I know there's 15,000 or whatever it is. I know there's a number.
Yes, you are correct. And I don't know the exact number it is, but it's in that $15,000 range that if you make above that, or for every $2 you earn, a dollar of Social Security, you know, is going to go back. So that's
right.
The one thing. So go on.
All right. My question is, do they consider a retirement plan from your employer as income?
No.
For that?
No. It has to be has to be earned income, W-2 income.
Okay. So something I get that was from my employer that was taxed, you know, that I'm not going to be taxed until I draw it, that is not considered income then?
No, it is not.
Okay, that answered my question. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, you too. Goodbye.
All right. Hey, great, great questions there. We have a guest, Mary Jo Borman. She is an estate planning attorney and is located in our building at 123 East Main in downtown Zeeland. So welcome, Mary Jo. And some of the things we're talking about is what to do when your spouse dies. And, you know, a question that came up, I think of, let's say my parents get to a point where they really can't handle things, so I have power of attorney over things. But if that one of them dies or both of them dies, what happens to that power of attorney?
When someone dies, that power of attorney is automatically revoked. So that can only be used during the person's lifetime.
Okay.
So if you've been helping your dad pay some bills or something like that and using that power of attorney to sign checks, you're not going to be able to do that anymore. And so it is important to have those accounts set up so that you mentioned the payable on death, so that since you can't use the power of attorney to pay his bills and handle finances anymore, if he set that account up as a payable on death, then that account will transfer to you and you can handle it that way.
Okay. So when a person dies, the power of attorney, I would have no legal jurisdiction to write checks on that account. That goes away.
Right.
So one of the first things you do when a spouse passes away is, you know, and here's where a funeral home is very helpful. A funeral home will help, as you mentioned, get your the death certificates mm-hmm. for you. What are some of the other first things that you need to do to help you through this process? It may not be financial necessarily, but what are some other things that need to be done as you think of going through this process? What's a checklist? What are some things that you need to check off besides, okay, death certificates, you take care of the funeral. What are some of the next things to take care of?
Well, I think often just going through your mail diligently is a way to find out what's out there and what may need to be taken care of. You know, maybe you're still making a car payment and you get a bill in the mail, or you know that that payment is made. Well, you want to check, is that bill just in your spouse's name? Is it in your name? Is the vehicle in your spouse's name? Do you need to transfer that to your name? You'll see, you know, if there's life insurance, you know, there may be life insurance that you're not aware of, but when you get a statement or some sort of bill in the mail, that's a good way for you to find out, you know, what might be out there that you're not even familiar with. And that may take, you know, 6 months to a year.
Mm-hmm.
You probably, with life insurance, you probably don't get a monthly bill or anything like that. But when you get a statement at some point during the year, there may be a policy out there that you were unaware of. So you can find out a lot just by paying close attention to what comes through the mail.
That's a good point. You know, life insurance is one of those things that I have seen that will show up a year later, you know, like you said,
sometimes
the bill only comes once a year and you don't get any other statement. And all of a sudden you say, oh, there was life insurance out there on this person that passed away.
Right.
Where I see life insurance that gets commonly missed, a lot of times credit unions, your bank accounts, they'll automatically put a small $5,000 policy on a savings account or checking account that you have there with no cost to you.
Okay.
And when that person passes away, that's the most common thing that is forgotten about. It does end up as a, I can't think of the proper term here, but the state has
escheats to the state.
Yeah.
Sure.
So the state has a list of these unclaimed assets, and I see that commonly listed there.
Yeah. So maybe a trip to your office is a good idea too, and you probably have a list of things like that to remind people to look for and make sure they're asking financial advisors and accountants. from a estate planning point of view, I think sometimes people panic thinking I need to change my will now or I need to change my trust. Typically, those documents are written so that, you know, if one of you, if you or your spouse dies, everything passes to that surviving spouse. And then when you're both gone, you know, typically they're written that, that then when you're both gone, it'll go to kids or nieces and nephews or wherever you have it going. Mm-hmm. So you don't always have to make a change to a will or a trust. They're sort of written to assume that one of you will die first and then the other will die, and it accounts for all of those things. But if you have a spouse that's died and you have a will and you've only named your spouse and no one beyond that, then you do have some changes and some thinking to do about your estate planning because now your spouse is gone, so now where do you want your assets mm-hmm. to go? And then the, you know, maybe you've named your spouse to be the executor of your will or the trustee under your trust. And again, typically you'll name successor trustees so that if your spouse has died, maybe your kids or siblings or someone will step into that role. But if you haven't, then that's something, an area too, where you would have some changes and updating to do
okay.
to an estate plan.
You know, one thing that I see when a person out there, let's say they have a trust set up, is that trust, I mean, a trust is a legal document, but let's say you don't have your bank accounts, you don't have your land, you don't have your investment accounts listed in the trust. And I see this commonly happen that assets get missed. They don't get included in the trust because
sure.
people just think having a trust will include everything in it. It
right.
doesn't, does it?
It doesn't. You have to transfer those things in yourself. And that's the key to making that trust work. You can spend your money on a trust and have a beautifully written trust, and if you don't transfer assets into it, it won't do you any good at all. So that is the key to making that trust work, is especially an asset that would typically go through probate, like a bank account or your home. It's not difficult to do, but you need to have someone, you know, usually an attorney, or if you're buying a new home, remember to tell them, we want this in our trust. And with the bank accounts, you need to go to the bank. It's not difficult. They do it all the time and have a form you can fill out and sign listing your trust as the owner of that bank account. But you want to do that while you're still both able to make
okay.
that change.
Let's say you have everything listed in the trust and you miss one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Does that one thing need to go through probate, or is there a clause in the trust that says, oh, everything else is supposed to be in here, we'll pull this in?
There is. Usually you do a pour-over will that says, if I forgot to put anything in my trust, that's how I want it to go.
Okay.
But you still will have to go through probate to
okay.
make that happen. So
gotcha.
It will still pass the way that you want it to, but you haven't avoided probate.
Okay.
So,
but the will is at least there and it directs in the right, and it goes through probate pretty quickly then.
Yep. It's often, well, it depends what the asset is. Sometimes if it's a bank account with a small amount, there's kind of a shortcut version. It's an affidavit version that you
okay.
can file and avoid going through the whole lengthy probate process. And often it will be a bank account, or what happens probably most common is people set up their trust, they transfer their house into the trust, and then down the road they sell the house, buy a condo, and forget to put that into the trust.
Gotcha.
And then that is going to go through the probate process, and there probably isn't a shortcut way to do it.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Hey, listeners, we're going to be back with more of what to do when a spouse passes away. We have Mary Jo Borman as our special guest. She's an estate planning attorney at 123 East Main in downtown Zeeland. So if you have questions, feel free to call in. The lines are open at 395-1450, and we'll be back after a short break. Hey, welcome back, listeners. Thanks for listening. Hey, we're in the last section of our show here. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters with Kerry Cooley, and we have a special guest, Mary Jo Borman. And Mary Jo is an estate planning attorney. Mary Jo, just so, where can listeners, if they have questions and they don't call in today, where can they reach you at? Where are you located at?
I'm located right in your building, Kerry, right in there with you and Jack at 123 East Main, downtown Zeeland. The phone number there is 616-772-2487.
All right. Well, hey, during break, we were talking a little bit about some things that are very important that if a spouse dies, let's say there's a debt out there. You mentioned car loan. Let's say a business that this person has owned and has debt on it. How are some of those things handled in when the spouse dies that has owned these things or is just in this person's name?
That's a question I get fairly often, Kerry, and it's one thing to keep in mind. It's possible that if the debt was just in your spouse's name, you may not be responsible for that debt anymore. A car loan might be a good example. However, if you're still driving that car, the loan is likely secured by the car, and you know they can come and take the car.
The car's gone.
Can be repossessed. So it may be in your benefit to make sure that debt gets paid, and they can be pretty persistent. Credit card debt is one I get asked about fairly often, too. It may be that your spouse had a credit card in their sole name, and typically those are unsecured debts. And they can be pretty persistent in trying to collect those. And it may be, you know, you may need to look at, you know, you probably signed something when you got that credit card debt, and maybe you added, you know, yourself as a second party on the debt or something.
Okay.
But you do want to be cautious with those and find out. The same was true with the business debt. You likely are not responsible for business debts that weren't in your name. But those you probably want to go talk to an accountant or an attorney.
Okay. Yep.
And bring in whatever paperwork you have.
Gotcha. And in a case like that where a spouse owns a business, it's very important for any business owner to have a business continuation plan.
Definitely.
You know, will the business continue? How will it continue? Is there somebody in line to buy it? I know Jack and I have done that in case one of us passes away, in case both of us passes away. It's very important to have. I know another thing you probably run into often, I know we have in talking, I know I have, but if your spouse dies, who's changing your beneficiary designations? You need to go out and change that on things like your insurance, your investment accounts. What other things need to be changed? You know, you need to change that to who you want it to go to.
Right. And that's something, you know, often when people set up an account or purchase a life insurance policy, they fill out that beneficiary designation form, and it's so obvious that to name their spouse, but they may not have named a contingent beneficiary. And that's something that people don't, you know, they don't send you that beneficiary form every year for your review. So unless you're thinking of it, you may not even remember if you named a contingent beneficiary. But if you only named your spouse as a beneficiary of an investment account or a life insurance policy or a bank account, and your spouse has now died, you're going to want to make sure that you add a new beneficiary. And
mm-hmm.
It would be in your best interest, certainly, to review all of those things and contact anyone that you have a policy or an investment account with and say, do I have a contingent beneficiary or do I need to update that?
Yeah, that's so important. I know we just recently went through one with a cousin of my wife. His dad passed away. So things that you have to think through this is, okay, did he have a pension? And if he did, will that pension continue on for
right.
the surviving spouse or doesn't it? So you need to contact that pension company. The life insurance, if there's life insurance out there, you need to contact them. Also Social Security, you need to contact the Social Security office to say, hey, my spouse has died. And what they do is Social Security of the, you know, whatever Social Security income was coming in, one will be dropped. The lower one will be dropped, the higher one the surviving spouse will get.
Okay.
Those are other things. You know, contact your life insurance person. And the other thing, roll over, if you have an IRA, roll over your spouse's IRA into your own IRA. And, you know, contact if he was employed by an employer. What do you do in a case where he worked for somebody and he had life insurance through that employer? Is there anything legally that you would do or does that person need to do?
Yeah, I would think you're going to want to contact the employer or their human resources department and find out beneficiaries that were named. And if the, you know, some of those policies may disappear once the employment, you know, if they quit working there before they died, maybe there isn't a policy anymore, but it would certainly be worth checking. And I think what often happens is, you know, especially if it's through your employer and you've worked there a long time, you may have signed on for that life insurance policy before you even had kids.
Mm-hmm.
Or people, when they first get married, purchase a life insurance policy, and that's why they've named each other, but there are no kids or contingent beneficiaries. And it's just not something that you think about.
Yeah.
And really, those are good things to think about if your spouse, if you see that one of you is failing in health. You know, to make sure you make some of those changes while they're still living. It's good to review all of those things and not wait.
Some of those major life events force you to review all this, and it's a good thing, you know. So in the case there, contact like the human resource department to say, okay, what benefits? Because if you were getting, you know, not only life insurance through your employer, that spouse that's passing away could have the health care insurance. Now that, you know, could go away also. So, you know, you need health care out there to cover conditions in certain situations that going forward, how are you going to be covered? You know, that's
right.
A big thing right now with health insurance.
Pension plans, too. Sometimes there is a death benefit and sometimes there is not. Sometimes, you know, when a person dies, those pension benefits just end. Or sometimes there may be pension benefits that continue for a surviving spouse, but not to kids. And I think through your employer, you have some options when you set that up. So if you didn't talk about that with your spouse while he or she was living, again, you'd want to make sure you contact that human resources department.
Yeah. And here's the thing I never thought of, too, because I've never gone through it, is, you know, if you have a child that's in college and one of the spouses die, you want to reach out to the college financial aid office, because there may be, your son or daughter may be eligible for special assistance or increased financial aid because of the situation too.
That's a great suggestion.
Yeah, I never thought of that, but as, you know, I was going through some of these things, it's like, yeah, that makes sense.
Your income has certainly changed and it may affect some of those things.
Absolutely. There are certain benefits out there. You know, what are some other things that come to mind that has popped up in stories that you've dealt with that, how to avoid some problems, or what are the things that you can come to mind that you think for our listeners that, hey, you better make sure you do this?
I think the best thing to do is just make sure that you review these things, you know, fairly often. I know when people, they prepare their estate plan and they put a will together or they have a trust done, and it's easy just to stick that on your shelf and not think about it again. And I know when people come to see you or Jack for their review, I know you often remind them you might want to pull out your will and your trust and your estate plan and make sure that's all up to date. But those are the things, those executors that you've named and any successors and those beneficiary designations are always going to be key things. And make sure that you have things in your trust. Mm-hmm. And again, whether it's every couple of years or every time you open a new bank account or sell your house, any, you know, sort of significant transaction like that, you're going to want to be thinking about beneficiary designations.
And it's a good time to review everything.
Definitely.
And it's, you know, you need to move forward. You just can't sit idle in a situation. You need to move forward.
Right.
The other thing I think I've heard you say to people, and I know we say, is don't make any major decisions during probably the first year. You know, you need to get everything else straightened out, make the adjustments you need to. So I know, Mary Jo, we're already at the end of our show. The time always goes so fast here. Next week, our show, we're going to be answering all your questions. So we have a ton of questions that people have emailed, called our office. So it's going to be called The Question Show. We're going to be answering a ton of questions. Look forward to call-ins that day. Today, you've been listening to WHTC Money Matters with Carrie Cooley and our special guest, Mary Jo Borman. Thanks, and have a great weekend.